This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Tom Latcham on FUBAR Radio.
She would never say where she came from. Yesterday don't matter if it's gone. While the sun is bright, or in the darkest night, no one knows. She comes and goes. Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Question why she needs to be so free. She'll tell you it's the only way to be. She just can't be chained to a life where nothing's gained and nothing's lost. At such a cost. There's no time to lose, I heard her say. Catch your dreams before they slip away. Dying all the time, lose your dreams and you may lose your mind. Ain't life unkind?
Hello, welcome to the show. This is Tom Latcham here. It's FUBAR Radio. It's 10:03. Thanks for joining me now. Almost 2 weeks after the Paris terrorist attacks, Brussels, where the atrocities were planned, remains in the highest state of alert amid fears of another attack. The metro system, schools and universities will stay closed until tomorrow as Europe's most wanted man, Salah Abdeslam, remains at large, possibly, they think, in Molenbeek, the district of Brussels recently described as the jihadi capital of Europe. Later in the show, we'll be talking to a leading photojournalist and anthropologist who spent 9 years living in Molenbeek, and he'll tell us what life is like in the now infamous area. Meanwhile, David Cameron looks like he's found support among fellow MPs to carry out airstrikes in Syria, and a Commons vote is likely to go ahead soon. This comes a day after he announced his defence spending review that's promised a host of extra firepower for the armed forces. And a poll today in The Independent suggests that the majority of the public would leave the EU after the Paris attacks. We'll be talking about all that and more in the next 2 hours here on FUBAR Radio with me, Tom Latcham, my guest presenter, BB Lynch, and my paper reviewer, journalist James Tapper. But first, introduce BB. How are you?
Well, Tom, I'm a little disappointed.
Disappointed with the intro?
No, you're a nice, smooth intro.
Smooth intro.
Very
you like
good.
That. I've got my most serious voice on.
I was promised biscuits.
Oh, well, that's the serious stuff. The heavyweight issues of the day.
I'm sorry to move from Paris to this, but
no,
you know.
No. Well, look, yeah, I'm a man You know me.
You are a
BB.
Man.
I'm a man.
Stop that sentence
I
there.
I am a man.
You're a man.
But I'm a man who keeps his promises.
Oh.
So.
Tom, I've just had to take my lenses out and I can't see you. Wave at me a little bit.
It's probably for the best. It's very early on this Tuesday morning.
You totally did.
Here you go. Cadbury's salted caramel crunch fingers.
They're new.
Well, you don't know. You probably can't see them. So they could. That's just a packet of toilet roll.
I took my lenses out because they were... that's a Brillo pad for me.
And some McVitie's milk choc hobnobs. Unfortunately, I'm on a diet, so
no,
they are all for
it.
You.
Oh, no, really don't do that.
I've got a banana.
Well, and there's the quote of the day.
No, it's actually a banana.
It's
I haven't
a
just
banana.
Exposed
it's
myself to Miss Lynch.
Has anyone ever bullied you before into bringing snacks?
No. Usually they're very well behaved, my co-presenters,
so
and they don't make diva-ish demands. But it's nice to have a diva in the house.
Good.
How are you anyway?
No, I'm really good, thank you. I haven't seen you for a long time.
No, you haven't.
You're
you still can't see me.
Well.
You still can't see me.
Can't
what are you talking
that?
About? I look well.
So, no, well...
You look well. Blurry.
When I arrived, I had my lenses in, and Tom looked as handsome as ever. And then I got pain in my eye.
I do that to women.
So I had to take my lenses out.
I do that to women.
But no, I haven't seen you for about a year.
No,
longer.
It's true. Yeah. Well, it's nice to have you here. What have you been doing in the past year?
Oh, you know.
What have you been up to this year?
Just on the run. I've been moving house many, many times. I'm not on the run.
Homeless, though.
Well, no, not
or
homeless.
Or like a tortoise.
I'm like a little nomad. But no, I'm home and I'm back in London and I'm in Rotherhithe.
Mm.
Very nice. When I said Rotherhithe,
is it
earlier,
nice? I mean, it
I
never
really
used to be, did it?
I really like it. I'm being poisoned.
Anyone who doesn't live in London, Rotherhithe is an area of South East London around Millwall, basically. If you know the idea of Millwall, Millwall Football Club, it's that sort of area.
I prefer to think it beyond Bermondsey Street, but yeah, sure.
So it's that sort of area. Give you an idea of what it's like. Although now becoming rapidly gentrified,
yes,
I believe.
And
is that correct?
I believe that's solely down to me.
they're all flocking. The BB Lynch regeneration project.
I mean, who knew? The 2 weeks since I've been there has changed it enormously.
Are you only been there 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But I love it. And there's no petition to get rid of me yet, so I think it's going very well.
Where were you before?
I'm being poisoned in my face, but we're going to talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah, we might need to take a picture. I was honestly moving all around, and why have I been moving all around? It's London housing. Let's get started on that. But, you know...
You are actually then kind of homeless then, like moving...
Why do you keep wanting to say that I'm homeless?
It is the life, ladies and gentlemen, of a freelance journalist.
I was experimenting with sofas, which didn't come out that well, did it, when I just said that. No, I've just been out and about, round and about, giving people the pleasure of my company.
Right.
Even that didn't come out well. You know what I'm saying?
No, I do. I totally know what you mean.
I know. Have you missed me?
I have missed you. We're having housing issues of our own. We're trying to buy a house currently. We've got an offer in on a place. We're up against four other people.
When you say we, do you mean me? Because I didn't know about this.
You might end up on my sofa at some point by the
Brilliant.
Sounds of it. No, me and my girlfriend, we're in a bid with four other people. So we've put in our best and final offer and we're now waiting to see whether I think we've probably gone in $5,000 too low, so probably not, but that was the point. You know,
asking for $5,000?
We didn't want... It's a very cheap house. It's a very cheap
house.
No,
you're asking me for $5,000.
Oh, if you want.
You know,
how much is the sofa worth? You can come and live there for a few months.
$2,000. The final thing that you should do when you're going for a house?
What's that?
The arm wrestle.
I don't know how that's going to work.
Just arm wrestle whoever. So four other people, do you know who they are?
No, but although I did bump into someone in the open house that I knew who had a pregnant wife who I haven't seen for a long time. And I mean, that was always going to tug at
the
heartstrings.
Pregnant wife card.
Well, one of the people who was there, and this wasn't my the guy I knew, had his child with him and handed these old, they were grandparents, these guys who were selling the house. They were moving out to the parlour to be with their grandchildren, and he handed them his kid. Good job the kid was ugly.
Couldn't you have just
get that ugly little kid out of my face? But we've had to ham it up on the whole thing. We're like, oh, you know, we want to start a family straight away.
Yeah.
And we can't imagine a house we'd love to bring up kids in more than in Seven Sisters in Tottenham.
Is it Seven Sisters?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I can imagine a better place to bring up a kid than Seven Sisters, but that's not what I'm saying in the email.
Seven Sisters, that's my favourite musical. Yes, don't say that in the email. You know, you could have used me in your bargaining. Just... Poor old Lynchy. and I could just
we've got
one.
A child. She's older than me.
How dare you?
Oh, come off
All
it.
Right. Am I? Yeah.
experienced.
Would you like a
veteran? No,
like
you know I can't eat those.
Oh.
You know I can't eat those. Anyway, question of the day. This advert has been going down a storm. It's not going down a storm. It's been creating a storm. I'll play a little bit now. It's the Lord's Prayer. It's been played in cinemas. Here we go.
Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name.
Thy kingdom come.
Anyway, whatever. It's basically cinemas have banned that advert because it features the Lord's Prayer. They say it's offensive. It's caused a lot of storm. People have been apparently flocking online to see it. 500,000 views. But I don't really care about that. What I want to know is what really offends you. So, BB, have a think about that. What is it that really offends you? Try and be funny. I mean, you know, I mean, don't be racist. You know, try to avoid the racism.
I haven't suddenly got racist since you last saw me. That hasn't happened.
Well, yeah, who knows? I mean, you are living in Rotherhithe, you know, the home of white flights. But anyway, so what offends you? Get in touch. Tom@foobarradio.com. Tweet us at foobarradio or call us on 0330 223 0200. That's 0330 223 0200. Coming up, we'll also have the business section with Matt Haycox. He'll be on the phone. He hasn't come down from Leeds this week. Unfortunately, we don't have his beautiful face in the studio. And we'll also be previewing the weekend's big world heavyweight title fight between Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko with our resident boxing expert, Steve Lillis. That is if his flight back from Vegas isn't delayed. He's a jet-setting man, and he might be late. But anyway, we'll see. Anyway, BB, we'll play a song, and then we'll get James Tapper in, and we'll go through some of the papers. I know this isn't the bit that you're looking forward to, but, you know, we'll pretend
we'll explain
it.
That
we'll pretend it is. This is No Distance Left to Run by Blur. It's FUBAR Radio. It's me, Tom Latcham, and it's 10:11 with BB Lynch.
It's the music that we choose. To keep myself tethered to the days I tried to lose. My mama said to slow down, you must make your own shoes. Stop dancing to the music, I've got riddles in a happy mood. Keep my groove on. Watching a fake trail, caught up in the conflict between his brain and his tail. And if time's elimination, then we got nothing to lose. Please repeat the message, it's the music that we choose. Keep from our groove on. It's the music that we
get the cool.
Yes, it's me, it's Fubar, it's 10:14. I'm here with BB Lynch, my co-presenter for the day. Hello, BB, how are we?
Well, you know, Tom, since the song, I'm fine.
Since the song, you've broken
I had a little bit of a breakdown.
You've broken down completely,
yeah,
but it's fine, yeah. Okay, we've got 3 minutes of the song, or 6 minutes of the song, enough to pick you up again.
Yeah.
But we're joined in the studio now by James Tapper. Hello, James.
Hi, Tom, how are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
A regular pay-per-viewer in my studio, and it's nice to have you back.
Are you very old friends?
James used to give me stories when I was at the News of the World, when I was the TV editor every now and again, you know, when he was freelance. So
yeah, this is true. Yeah, I gave you a few stories, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah, you did. I mean, I remember it, if you want me to go into detail about what the story was in particular.
I can't remember.
Kerry Katona.
I know, I want to know.
I cannot remember.
No, it wasn't Kerry Katona. It was the other one, the Scouse one that was in Jen...
Yes, it's Jennifer something
Frost?
Or other.
No. She was in Brookside. Was she in Brookside?
Yes, that's the one. She was a bit desperate. I can't remember.
She was like really big and fat, and basically she lost those.
Excuse me, curvy and looking lovely.
No, she was massive.
And
she was huge, and she became the face of a slimming brand.
Oh.
I mean, it was a big one, wasn't it, James? It was a big story.
It was so big that you still remember it almost 10 years later.
It's mate, I've
quite well made, James.
No, but the other day I was driving, doing this house hunting, which we were just talking about, and we drove around Walthamstow, and we went to a place in Walthamstow, and I was like, I got a door slammed in my face here on a doorstep. It was like after the riots, someone, like some young daughter of a copper, had been in the riots, and I'd knocked on their door and they basically told me to piss off. And I was like, it's funny what you remember, isn't it, when you're driving around Walthamstow?
It's extraordinary.
Before we get into the papers, and I know it's your show, but I'm just jumping
in. No, you crack on. You are the co-presenter.
Am I allowed to ask about doorstepping? Is it okay to do? Did you ever feel weird about doing it?
Oh, I hated it. I was rubbish at it as well. And I still am. I mean, nothing's changed. I mean, I just do it less frequently these days.
I always find the actual process of knocking was difficult. When you actually put your fist up to the door and went like that. That was difficult. That was the really hard bit.
I've got a copper's knock, so that doesn't help.
Oh, there you go. There's the second quote of the day. Is anyone writing these down?
So that doesn't help. You know what I mean? Like, oh the FBI's... In fact, I used to drive round back in the day in a sort of Astra. I basically looked like in a bad suit, you know, because journalists have got really bad sartorial...
No, I think that was
style.
Just you, Tom.
What?
And I just looked like a copper hanging around on council estates. Yeah. I did get called a copper a few times.
I'm sure that's what they were calling you. With the doorstepping, so you had to do it. You were told to do it.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you didn't feel morally...
They used to be... So you would do... there's an actual thing called... And I didn't tend to do this so much when I became the TV editor of the News of the World, but a death knock. Pretty self-explanatory what that is, but it's effectively when someone has passed away in a story, you go knock on the door of their parents and you try and sell it as, you know, you're taught how to do this effectively at journalism school. You try to sell it in a way as you could do it do something as a tribute to your son, or you might be angry with a certain thing. And actually, you know what, some people did respond to that, and it's not and it gave some people comfort. I mean, some people say it's an abuse or it's sort of exploitative. But actually it did, in some instances, give people a comfort. And as long as you weren't heavy on it, and you sort of were very gentle, and they said, no, I don't want to, and you didn't go back, it was
Why turn up at the door? Why not use the old-fashioned...
Well, that is the old-fashioned thing, because often, unfortunately, people aren't on the phone. And the thing that about modern journalism is that now we've got social media, people don't do that nearly so much. Mm. And that means that journalists will take information without actually talking to people about it. And that's, personally, I think is much worse. I think it's better to have a human element to it.
I've told this story on the air before, but I'll say it again. When me and my girlfriend started going out, I sent her a Facebook message. I had her on Facebook after about 4 months of going out, you know. And I went to send her a Facebook message, and I was like, oh my God, look, that's hilarious. And I rang her and I said, she was at work. I said, go and send me a Facebook message. She's like, I'm busy, Tom. I was like, just go and do it. It's funny. So she went to send me a Facebook message and she was like, oh my God. And I had basically messaged her. So we started going out in about 2013. I messaged her in 2007. Because she was friends on Facebook with Alexandra Burke from The X Factor. And I was basically saying, do you want to sell me a story? And she didn't tell me a story. In fact, she went and told Alexandra Burke. Who basically told all of her friends to stop talking to this horrible bastard journalist. Well, I was, as I've said before, you know, she could have had this.
Yeah.
5 years previously. Yeah. So, you know.
Imagine.
Who's the fool? 6 years, in fact. So who's the fool now, yeah?
Imagine what you could have done with the deposit back then for your house. You could have done so much better.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. We could have been buying Tottenham.
Yeah. As an area.
Yeah.
The team, all of them.
Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, right, we tend to try to look at the front pages.
No,
it's absolutely fine. And more of that, please, BB. It's nice to when a co-presenter, you know, grabs the
spotlight.
Show by the scruff of the neck.
Oh, I'm a grabber, you
drags
know that.
It through. But anyway, what are the front pages saying, James Tapper? There's a bit of a bad news day, really, today, isn't it, all round?
It's not a classic.
No.
I mean, there's none of these papers is going to win a Pulitzer, but then they don't normally.
And nor are we. So, let's not people in the big glass houses shouldn't throw stones, frankly.
I did win an award once for my journalism.
Did you?
It was a shafter, though, so I better not talk about that.
In the days when they used to really...
Celebrate bad journalism.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What award did you win?
It was a shafter for... I can't remember what the...
Do you remember anything you've ever done in your career, James?
Never. I can't remember the name of the award, but it was for a... For a James Bond story. It was when Casino Royale was coming out, and I unfortunately incorrectly predicted the name of the Bond girl who was going to be Vesper Lynd. In fact, I'm pretty sure the story was right until we ran it.
Like all stories,
exactly.
James, it was right at the time.
It wasn't even right at the time. It was right up until the point it was published, because at the point it was published, the actress was taken completely out of the picture because the James Bond producers don't like any leaks.
So you ruined it for that bongo. She's probably never forgiven you, James Tapper.
It's probably true.
If you're listening, what's her name?
I can't remember. I can't remember anything.
Can't remember your name back, love. We can't remember
but
your name. So not only have you been forgotten and erased from Bond, James Tapper can't even remember your name either. No one knows who you are.
You can't remember my best ever story that I sold you. So, you know, you can't remember. What's he called? Jennifer...
Oh. Ellison.
Yay!
Finally, we got there.
Anyway, right,
whatever.
So the Sun.
From one cracker to another, what are the Sun saying?
So the Sun are saying, the Sun have got a story which isn't even an exclusive today. That's how bad the Sun is.
No, but that's how the Sun's got.
Yeah,
and when they do an exclusive, such as yesterday, when they say 1 in 5 Muslims support ISIS, they get into a lot of trouble.
Yes, because it wasn't quite true. That's maybe why they're doing this. Anyway, the story today is a speed gun story, and I think the entire point of this story is to give them a couple of good headlines, which is, the first one is, the splash headline is Granny Get Your Speed Gun, because the story is basically about how police in Wales are giving grandparents and mothers speed guns to point at cars.
I'd love that job.
It sounds fantastic, doesn't it?
I'd love it.
Sounds really boring, doesn't it? Well, I suppose if you're a grandmother.
Well, that's why it's great for grandparents. My mum would love it. So anyway, Granny Get Your Speed Gun, and then they say they've lost the plot again, which is a classic.
I was once dispatched to try to catch Mr. Loophole. You know Mr. Loophole? Do you remember Mr. Loophole?
Yes,
the famous speeding lawyer that gets all the celebrities off.
Do you remember
speeding?
His name?
Yeah, Nick Freeman.
Well done.
Jennifer, what is his name?
I was once dispatched to try and catch him speeding.
Speeding.
So I sat outside.
He was a bridge player.
I sat outside his house, and I must stress now, because he is obviously a very high-powered lawyer.
Yeah.
He didn't speed. But we did set out to try to catch him doing so, and I basically sat outside his house at 5 in the morning for a week. And I was effectively... this is the equipment I was given. I was given one of those, not even proper one of those speed guns. I had to go and hire one that measures people for running. So, like a running speed gun. And then I was like, how am I going to prove this? Like, even if I've got him there, how am I proving he's speeding? And I basically followed him. I had to follow him down the motorway, like, with this speed gun. And in the end, it was just like, this isn't working. So we tried to follow him down the motorway while the photographer took photographs of my speed thing over my shoulder, which didn't happen. So it was just
respect,
like a ridiculous waste of time.
I've got an auntie that says that, and everything she says afterwards is so disrespectful.
Yeah.
But with respect, what's the most ridiculous thing you've done in your career? Because I'm sensing that was up there.
I was once dispatched.
When you remember when Wayne Rooney hurt his.
You were never News Bunny, were you?
What's the news? No, I was never News Bunny or the Mirror Chicken, the Mirror Chicken or something. No.
Chicken.
No, I was once when Wayne Rooney got injured his foot before the 2006 World Cup. Do you remember that? His metatarsal. Mm. And there was 36 days. Will Rooney make it? Won't he make it? On the first day of the 36, I was sent out to sit outside his house and basically told I was going to be there for the next 36 days. And
with,
I was like,
with all pot noodles.
I was, well, honestly, it was like really, it was not a high point in my career. And thankfully, after about a day, one of his security guards came around, and I was on a dangerous bend because there was nowhere to park. He lives in the countryside, so I was on this dangerous country bend. One of his security guys came and went, "You've got to go." And I was like, "I'm not going until the editor tells me to go," you know. And he went, "Okay." 15 minutes later, the editor rang up and said, "You've got to move." Thank God for that.
That's so, if only you could get that service at every doorstep, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Can you call the editor? Here's his number.
That's brilliant. God, that's up there. I once got sent to doorstep Sven-Göran Eriksson. When Sven-Göran Eriksson wasn't at home and we knew that it wasn't, I got sent to Sweden. I spent a week in Sweden.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing, is it?
That's not a bad thing, but it was the most pointless job I ever did because Sven was in London. It was like everyone knew he was in London.
Hang on.
But I had to go to Sweden.
I've got another one. You remember when Jose Mourinho lost his dog?
No.
Jose Mourinho had an illegal... No, he didn't.
Jennifer Ellison.
He had an illegal dog that he brought over from Portugal that he hadn't got a passport for, pet passport. Uh-huh. And basically, they tried to get it. The authorities tried to get his dog. So he sort of like spirited it away in a car. And I was sent out on the streets of London along with the Fleet Street Pack to try and find Jose Mourinho's dog, which... probably wasn't in the country either. So there you go.
Can I tell you
all the highbrow stuff on the tabloids?
Yeah,
can
absolutely.
Can I tell you my one?
Go on.
It's not. Actually, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, good one. Okay. That's a good story now.
It's better than both yours. I'm not telling you.
No, all right, we'll get it out of there.
All right, okay, we'll do it later.
Yeah, what's the Daily Mail saying?
Daily Mail's
got another big exclusive, has it?
It's another big non-exclusive story. The tumble dryer blaze warning, they're saying. There's an alert for families who own Hot Points, Indesits and Creda machines because apparently they could catch fire because lint can form in the filter and stuff. That's forever happening to me.
I'm always setting fire to me lint.
The thing is that I think the Daily Mail have missed the real story here, which is that some of these tumble dryers have been working for more than 11 years, which doesn't sound like any tumble dryer I've ever owned.
I've never owned a tumble dryer.
I'm not a fan of the dryer.
No.
Why put anything
exactly.
in a dryer?
Yeah. Well,
big opinions here on FUBAR Radio. BB doesn't like tumble dryers.
James Tapp has never owned one for 11 years.
You used to live for, if you've ever lived in Northern Ireland where there is no sunshine, then you'll know that.
Well, Manchester
same
also
thing, same
has a minimum amount of sunshine every year. That's the only option. But you're right, absolutely. It's a dull story,
but
it's on the front page of the
Daily Mail. You delivered it beautifully. James, you were on fire. Not unlike the
Daily Mirror goes, doesn't it, with the this trial? So be careful because it's a live trial.
It's a live trial. Well, the Daily Mirror, I think it's a far more interesting story than the rest of the front pages. It's all about the Hatton Garden heist, alleged heist, I should add.
Because they called them the Diamond Dummies in inverted commas. Why?
Yes, because this is the trial opened and the prosecutor has been. And outlining the case. Mm. So this is what the prosecutor said, that they spent 3 years plotting this in a pub. So in fact, it may have been longer. Can you imagine spending 3 years in the pub? It does sound sort of
fantastic.
You know, sounds like a great thing to be doing. So after 3 years of planning, and what do they do to plan? Well, they looked at YouTube videos for how to drill through, to use diamond drilling. And the other thing they did was. I can't find it now. Oh, yes. One of the alleged robbers apparently used his Oyster card to travel from his home to the
frugal.
The other thing was
frugal.
Yes, exactly.
Why waste money on a cab?
And to cover their tracks, they went to great lengths, apparently, according to the prosecution, by buying Forensics for Dummies, the famous or very important, very impressive book, which, to be honest, perhaps that was one step ahead of Scotland Yard.
I bought the Quran for Dummies. Because I thought everyone goes on about the Quran, don't they? About Islam and everything. No one actually understands it, do they? So I bought the Quran for Dummies.
And how are you going?
I haven't read it yet. No, so, but I would like to at some point.
Yeah. So a friend of mine lived in a place, and it was next to a shop. And in this place, there were lots and lots of flats. And the shop was like raided, and it was all like in the night. It was all kind of, you know, and the way they'd done it, someone in one of the flats in the other building had drilled through. So there's a drill scene. So don't look at me like that.
No.
You may not be looking at me. Am I looking at you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking. So it'd be weird if I weren't looking at you.
But anyway, they drilled from their like their flat within the building into the sweetie shop, and then took. Like all the money and blah 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 blah, and they were found because there was a trail of sweet wrappers.
Really?
Amazing.
Literally a trail of sweet wrappers.
The greedy robbers. It's just the best thing ever, isn't it?
Were they kids?
No.
I really want some sweets.
Really
in the middle of the night.
It's fantastic. But it did sound like one of those great escapes, like 10 years with a, you know, a Black and Decker to get through, and they came away with a fruit salad.
I think it's, it sounds to me like a Carry On film, you know, Carry On allegedly robbing or something. It's fantastic.
And so, very quickly,
a couple of other stories that are actually
of note,
a little bit more important, which is that the I says that 52% of Britons actually now want to leave the European Union. There's an opinion poll which says this is the first time I believe that a majority of Britons don't want to be in the European Union. So that will make the next 2 years quite interesting.
Yeah. Well, David Cameron wants to stay in.
Well, who knows?
I mean,
who knows
what he wants? I think he probably does. I mean, he does, because that's why he's trying to put it off and sort of. I mean, it seems he wants to stay in. So you think that's the Paris terrorist attacks have helped him in some ways, in terms of it's put the welfare stuff to one side, and he was being monstered for that. It's been put to one side. And also, it's helped his drive, so to speak, to bomb Syria, which he wants to do, and also to spend lots of money on defence, etc., etc.
Yes, the stats have moved from, so it's 52% now.
It doesn't unfortunately give that detail, at least not in my copy of the anyway. maybe
but I think it was 45%.
Was it 45%
that wanted to leave like 6 months ago?
Right.
So, and one person who is who doesn't want to go to war in Syria is Jeremy Corbyn. Yeah. He's on the front, isn't he, of the Times?
And he's actually riding high in the opinion polls, according to the Times.
Not in the public. Oh, right, no. Sorry, I thought you were joking.
No. This is he's still the first choice, but he's the first choice for Labour grassroots. So he's riding high in the opinion polls of the Labour grassroots. So not anybody else, but them.
He's higher, in fact, than he was when he got in, which seems remarkable.
Didn't you find his speech moving?
Which one?
When he took the job, got the gig, stood up and was declared.
Not really. I mean, he's not a very good public speaker, is he?
I quite like that about him. Because he just doesn't seem polished. I want him more polished, to be more statesmanlike.
Yeah.
But there was something, for me, I mean, we were talking about me moving around earlier, the whole, when he did accuse what's going on in London as social cleansing, I kind of thought that was the first time.
Is this a man who lives in a £600,000 townhouse in Islington?
He's allowed to have views and he's allowed to care about people, and it does appear that he does more than anyone else. And he offered me his sofa, Tom Latcham, which is more than you did.
Oh, did he?
That's very good.
Did he? That would have been a great story. I slept on Jeremy Corbyn's sofa.
I tell you, if he lives in a house in Islington that's worth £600,000, then he can't be living high on the hog, because
most of
the houses in Islington,
that's true.
He's got a box room.
Probably a studio flat. Actually, I've got a lot of time for Jeremy Corbyn, because he is my MP and he's helped me personally on several occasions with various things.
Yeah. I suspect he won't be your local MP past 2020.
No. Unfortunately, since he's become a Leader of the Labour Party.
Piscean of the...
Yes. Unfortunately, some of the local issues have sort of gone to pot. Like, so there's a lot more dog poo on the streets now that he's Labour
dog
leader.
Dog poo.
Yeah.
Really angry.
What?
I've never seen you angry.
No, I used to live in Tower Hamlets, and there's loads of dog shit everywhere. So anyway, listen, we'll come out with some more stories after this. We're going to play Crying Lightning by the Arctic Monkeys. I'm here with James Tapper and BB Lynch. It's 10:33.
Times to insisted of the strange and twisted and deranged, and I loved that little game you had called crying lightning, and how you like to aggravate the ice cream man on rainy afternoons. Little game you had called.
Hello, it's Tom Latcham on FUBAR Radio. Well, I don't know what happened there. My headphones fell out, so I thought I couldn't hear myself.
Hello.
So I thought no one else could hear me. And that's also BB Lynch just there that you can hear in the corner. How are you doing?
Did you hear what I said when I re-entered the studio area?
Well, that was a great piss.
Unbelievable.
All the toilets here are disgusting. Something like that. What was it?
I stole three things, but I'm not going to tell you what. Oh, that's better. I'm back. Yeah, I stole three things. I'm not going to tell you what, and you won't realise until next week.
Well, so long as they're not my stuff.
No, I said I love Tom Latcham.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh.
As I took the Cadbury. Oh, no, am I not?
Right.
There are other chocolate fingers available.
No, there aren't.
No, they're not. These are the best.
They're the only ones. You could probably buy your own brand or something, but
who
you know.
Would? Who would?
Exactly.
Who would?
Exactly. Homeless people. Living on sofas.
What is wrong with you? I'm not homeless.
Okay, all
but right. Homeless people that are homeless are not to be blamed in the way you're blaming.
No,
blamer.
No, I used to be a charity fundraiser for shelter.
Did
so.
You? I love that. Oh,
I don't believe that for a second.
I don't.
Is that
I
true?
Don't.
I did. Yeah,
really.
But there's
a street chugger. I was a chugger.
I'm angry about shelter. We will talk about that later when we. You know, you're talking about things that wind me up.
You up.
Oh,
yeah.
I've got quite a lot.
BB vents her spleen later on in the show. But we're still talking about the papers. And
sure.
One of the stories that's in the papers, and I've been asking you what really annoys you, is that people have been offended by the fact that the Lord's Prayer at cinemas has been banned by three cinema groups, and it's been criticised today by the Equality Commission, who claim it's a threat to British values. I don't know whether that's too much, but we'll talk about that in a second. Zarina on Twitter says, what offends me? Where do you want me to start? Yesterday's Sun, we've already talked about that, of course. ISIS, the X Factor, ignorant people. I could go on, please do, Zarina. Paddy Breeze on Twitter says, ads for gambling companies is what annoys him. And several people actually saying the Sun front page yesterday.
Has anyone said me?
Read into that what you will. Not yet.
Okay.
But I'm sure that will come
Hang
later.
On. I'll do that now.
Thank you so much.
what else offends you? Tom at FUBARradio.com. Tweet us at FUBARradio.
call us on the number. What offends you guys?
Me? You look at me. Well, as you were talking about shelter, so I hate emotive rhetoric, and I hate it when it's offensive and it deems me invisible. Tom, don't take your clothes off, love. I'm only talking. Goodness, he actually took
his clothes off.
I'm taking my clothes off. Sorry,
thank God there's no
getting hot in here.
I'm assuming Tom's short
off
for Thomas.
All my clothes. It is short for Thomas, yeah. Okay. And only my granddad calls me that.
Well, there you go, me and your granddad. So, for instance, the whole hardworking family. So, I'm single, no kids. So, someone says to me, hardworking families, I'm like, I'm not involved in this little scenario.
Yeah.
And through the whole election, it was driving me insane to the extent I would be tweeting him.
Exactly.
And really kind of losing it about it.
Also, what about the people who just dial it in? Do you know what I mean? I'm not.
I'm not hardworking either, exactly.
You know what I mean?
But more than that, and it's the whole stuff around it, and you're talking about shelter. Again, you know, I'm sure they do a great job, but they also don't seem to do as much for, again, single childless. So, and, you know, in the realms of finding properties, I believe when you are with a family or have a family, you are further up the list. Mm. And I've had, you know, anecdotal experience about this. Obviously, I haven't done, you know, done any research or anything. But
Paris, I thought you'd doing any research around the matter.
It makes me feel nauseous, the thought of it. But anyway, of people, you know, not being turned away, but just not really getting help. And anyway, they send me emails often, and they're always about, dear BB, and say this is from, I don't know, Jemima at Shelter. I've just made that name up.
But there probably is one. Yeah, I'm almost certain.
Yeah, but this one is emailing me. Jenny's pregnant, and we don't want her to be pregnant and homeless at Christmas. Will you help Jenny find a home at Christmas? And I go, well, Jemima, will you help someone that isn't pregnant get a home at Christmas? Because I think they're just as valid, Jemima. Mm-hmm. And Jemima never gets back in touch.
Jemima's not a real person.
It's as if Jemima doesn't exist. So I tweeted Shelter about this and said, why do you just use the word families all the time? Because, you know, people are people, and people should be helped. And they came back and told me, and I don't know if this is true, that the stats they get are around family, so they only use family. And I don't believe that's the truth. What I believe is it's more emotive to talk about a child.
Absolutely.
And so therefore they get the response, and that's the PR that goes out there. And it really upsets me. And I will say one more thing before my voice gets too high. So there was a TV show on recently, and again, it's this whole parent thing and emotive, and I suppose my umbrella rant is the emotive rhetoric, but when people are deemed invisible. That awful, awful story of the child that was drowned and washed up on the beach. I mean, hideous, horrible. The Victoria Derbyshire show.
Aylan, what's his name?
Yes.
I've just said the name of the show, so I'm not sure if that's allowed. But anyway,
fine.
You've got to.
You've just done it.
I've done it. We're talking about it, and they had an interview with the aunt, an exclusive interview with the aunt, and they preempted the interview with the aunt with, "If you're a parent, you might find this upsetting." Well, as a non-parent, it's the best news I've had all year.
Yeah, exactly.
Genuinely made my year. It's disgusting.
Absolutely.
And I really hate it.
Yeah, I agree. That is true. That is true. Well, maybe you should write a piece for it on it.
I totally should, shouldn't I?
For like the Mail or something.
Well, maybe not the mail.
my pain at non-kid anguish. Something.
It's not about that. It's about
I'm lonely, and actually, this makes me sad.
No, I've got chocolate fingers. Yeah. There ain't no lonely in this seat.
But what you're saying there about Shelter using families just as a name is something that actually I find really annoying. I don't know if it's offensive, but it's the fact that. Everything now is tailored to either public relations or search engine optimization, and that's what it's all about. You can't simply write something anymore that is true or an opinion. It's got to be something which has a marketing point to it. That's what the entire world seems to do. Not just journalists, not just people in media, who, to be fair, you know, we might have had something to do with this, but people in social media all the time seem to only work in either a fake outrage sort of way. Mm. So they will get very upset about something which is really not worth getting upset about, in the, you know, like the cinema ad for the Lord's Prayer, for example. Or they'll write about themselves, write about their lives in ways which isn't really a truthful way of writing. It's just a way that
it's to get
they
the
feel
hits.
As if yeah, it's exactly
it's to get it's, the hits and it's get the below the line. It's
the ultimate
it's
pursuit of clicks and attention.
Mm. Yeah,
sure. I think being a columnist in modern day and age would be really tough.
Because you
can see exactly what people's responses are, and hardly anyone ever writes nice things.
Well, I was annihilated for quite a bit of stuff I'd written, and it genuinely stopped me writing further. It made me self-censor to the extent, not what I wanted to say, but I was just so fearful of the response.
That's sad, isn't it?
Yeah, especially because I'm
You're right.
I'm
terrible.
Such a lovely little writer.
It was great.
It'd be such a shame that you missed out.
The world breathed a collective sigh of relief. Baby's not putting her thoughts
back,
down
Latcham.
On paper. So there's there are other stories in the paper. There's a story that I've been quite enjoying. It's sort of House of Cards-esque, isn't it, this story, about Mark Clark, the sort of the Tory organiser who's... again, we'll say they're all allegations, and that we should say that nothing's been proven, but allegations of sex and drugs and blackmail and all sorts of stuff at the heart of the Conservative Party, and it's dragging the top brass in, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah. I mean, so the Times have on their front page, down the end, bottom of the page, Tory sex scandal moves closer to number 10, and it, supposedly there's a link now to Downing Street. Because a Downing Street aide launched an extraordinary personal attack on the minister involved. This all comes from Grant Shapps. So,
yes. Well, and
I'm
also
not sure that perhaps undermines it slightly.
Well, he's the chairman of the Tory party, and this guy was running the road trips for the Tories to sort of bus in losers, effectively, Tory losers, to be bussed in to knock on doors and go, will you vote for the Tories? But what he would do, it is alleged, is... sort of have sex with some of these people and do other things that he shouldn't have been doing with these people. He's married, by the way, Mark Clark. He sounds like a lovely bloke. And also, there was a... I'm trying to remember what the... what are you laughing at? I'm trying to remember the exact phrase that he used. He used this method. I've got a photo because I sent it to my girlfriend yesterday.
Oh, I love a photo.
I sent it to my... Not that photo. That's a man having sex with an exhaust pipe. This one.
I found that quite moving.
This one.
Basically,
I thought we were doing the Charlie Sheen story.
Basically, it says Clark has been accused of preying on women during his notorious road trip campaigns. This is in the Mail yesterday. Three female actors have come forward to claim Clark attacked and threatened them. Two of the women claimed he bragged about using alcohol to make women sleep with him, calling it his IIP technique. Isolate, inebriate, and penetrate.
No. Oh, my word.
I always found flowers was better.
Just a cherry chocolate orange.
Terry, you are easy.
You have
chocolate fingers.
You had me at IIP. What was it, IIP?
IIP.
That's an wow.
Isolate, inebriate, and penetrate.
Penetrate, though.
That's awful.
Penetrate.
I love the fact he's got a name
penetrate?
For it.
I love it.
It sounds like management consultancy, doesn't it? I'm sure they don't
they
teach you that.
They brainstormed that.
I don't know how much we should be laughing at this, frankly, but there you go. He sounds like a real... He sounds like a stand-up chat. The sort of bloke that we should be having at the top of our political parties, that's what I think.
Exactly. It's
more of this, please. More of that kind of thing. I did actually tweet that, and someone said, "This happens all the time across all the political parties. It's basically a regular occurrence." I mean, there was talk that lots of Labour people had to be when they were sleeping with lots of civil servants during their time. So it's not just
the Liberal Democrats
naked
have their own
civil
problems.
Servant.
It's just not the Conservative Party. Yeah. We should say there are other parties available.
But will this be super damaging long term?
Probably not.
No.
I mean,
it's anything.
But the reason why it won't be is because there's no bloody opposition.
No, exactly.
Like, you know, the Tory party are involved in sex and drugs and blackmail scandals. They're involved in welfare cuts that is hitting normal families in the pocket badly.
Hardworking
families, exactly. Not us.
Normal families.
And, you know, and all these many things, Trident, airstrikes in Syria, a decent opposition would be absolutely battering them in the polls,
they're
and they're just
letting
isn't
them go.
Aren't
there isn't
one.
Exactly.
There isn't one. So
at least we're not going to go to war. Oh no, hang on. we are going to go to war, according to the Daily Mail.
War.
Right, we'll play another song. We'll play another song, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a bit more, some lighter stories.
Ah, good idea.
Yeah, that sounds a good idea. I mean, we had a bit of fun with Mark Clark there, didn't we?
Didn't we? So, didn't we?
Oh, the IIP technique, hilarious.
Stop it.
It's the Stone Roses.
I hear my song begin to
Radio.
Hello, it's Tom Latcham here on FUBAR Radio. It's 10:51 and I'm here with my co-presenter for the day, the lovable?
Lovable.
The IIP.
Lovable. We've just IIP'd her. Me and James Tapper.
It was very lovely. Thank you, boys.
No, you're welcome.
Thank you for taking the time and
energy. You're welcome. I mean, it wasn't... I mean, to be honest, it wasn't... It didn't take long. Well, it was only three and a half minutes on.
We're all busy people. We're busy people.
I'm glad my kids weren't here today.
Yeah, we got... Oh,
James brought his kids in last time.
He did.
And they were very bored. They were very bored. They hated it every moment. And
Tom misled them because he said they were going to get on air.
Well,
Tom, you mustn't lie to children. You must...
Really?
Not again, anyway.
Children in the forehead. That's what you must do to them. Anyone want a finger?
Another one, yes.
Clearly, I have no part to play in that, by the way.
No, of course, he's a married man. there are lighter stories in the papers. I mean, some funnier stories, some lighter stories. Which, James, would you care to talk about first?
Number plates. New number plates for next year.
That's good.
So the Sun has noticed that next year is 2016, and so number plates next year will have the number 16 in it. And that can potentially, if you hold a calculator the wrong way up, look kind of funny. So, for example, you won't get a number plate reading B16DCK because it might look a little bit like...
You can say it. It's FUBAR Radio.
Can I say it? Is that all right?
Yeah,
sure.
It's FUBAR Radio. Say it.
Big dick.
Nice.
Right, there you go. Yes. I mean, if we were on another radio station, and other radio stations are available, we wouldn't be allowed to say it. But this is FUBAR Radio, and we're non-regulated by Ofcom.
That's lovely.
Or any other rules.
And do you like
I mean,
that?
We are governed by the rules of the land. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, so
gravity.
Obviously. Gravity. contempt of court, as we sort of skated around earlier. Yeah. Libel, which we're constantly skating around. So, you know, there are laws that do govern this small pocket of North London, but Ofcom isn't one of them. So.
Hey.
Excellent. Hooray.
Yeah.
So
any other ones?
Some
of them are pretty inane. Yeah, I mean, there was another one that was...
B16BUT, Big Butt. And there's other ones which just don't make sense. PRI, PR16CK, which is prig. I mean, it's not actually...
Oh, sexy. It's saucy.
Prig. I mean, prig-g. What's that? I think they mean prick, but, you know. And then TT16TTY. Now, if it was just TT1, then it would be titty, but it's not. It's tig-ty.
Tig-ty.
I mean, what's tig-ty? Ooh.
Tig-ty.
Ooh, get your tig-tys out. There was actually a story a while ago, a little one in the paper that they'd banned from last year, and one of them was UKIP.
Oh.
Which I thought was an interesting one to ban, actually. It's like...
But we must all, as a group, and I, you know, now I think we are all three of us best friends. But this new Beebe's gang, we call it.
Yeah,
Beebe's gang.
You've literally just said that.
Beebe's gang. We must all judge people that have a personalised number plate. I mean, we do, don't we? There's no way that's ever...
Yeah, well,
okay.
It says in that story there's a number plate. The record number plate was O, I think, and it went for £512,000.
Oh, 25 O, yeah, 518 grand in.
So, if ever there was proof that people have more money than sense, exactly. It is there in a sentence in that story.
Do you want to know why I'm drinking so much water?
Are you pregnant?
No. Do you want to know why I'm drinking so much water?
Yes.
I had a porn star martini last night.
Well, why does that make you need
not pregnant?
Because I
water.
Have. It didn't make me pregnant. IIP. It's because my headache. It's like there's someone tap dancing.
Oh dear.
Yeah, and not a good tap dance.
No.
So do you know what's
this
in
isn't
it?
Fred Astaire. This is...
No, it's not even... No, it's not Jim
Fred.
Kelly. It's
Fred the weatherman.
We'll get you through, don't worry.
Thank you. We'll get you through.
Another story is that on page... Let's have a look. Where is it?
It's
page
25
of the Mirror and 27 of the Sun. And it's about one of the four last rare rhinos has been put down. What is this?
So one of the world's four remaining northern white rhinoceroses.
Oh, they're my favourite rhinoceroses. Ah, not them!
Not the other sort. No, the northern white rhinoceros. So, you know, Jennifer Ellison, I suppose.
Stop it!
Oh, you're so mean.
Stop it!
You're so
she's
mean.
A very beautiful woman.
And she's embraced it now.
So apparently, Nola, who was 41, was put down by zookeepers because she had arthritis and her condition worsened.
And
last
so
week.
There's only three left. Now, what I want to know is how many of them are women?
None of them are women.
Is that in the story?
No, because they're rhinoceroses, Tom.
What's the difference?
What? There are female rhinos.
Yes, but they're not women. Anyway, so there's two females and one male.
There's two females and one male. Oh, so that male's getting lucky.
When I said about Jennifer Aniston, it was a joke. She's not actually a rhinoceros.
I know she's not a rhinoceros, but there is so two women females. And a male.
They're all at the old...
That fella's going to have a good time, isn't he?
Yeah. Maybe
but
not.
What I've been talking about a lot recently with my girlfriend, who did say recently, what's the point in animals, when we were watching an animal show and I had to explain the ecosystem
actual point.
Yeah. What is the point in these animals? But she did make a valid point of like, you know, if these animals are like not surviving in the wild, then like, let them die out. I mean, you look at the panda, the giant panda. I mean, we basically look after them. We feed them. We put them in a room together with a female. You know, we do everything we can so these pandas can have sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they can't be asked.
Don't say sex.
They can't be asked. So, you know what? If you can't be asked, die.
Well,
right?
That's exactly. A beautiful, compassionate approach. Yeah.
That was the advert that the Friends of the Earth rejected last Christmas.
Yeah.
That's because the panda wasn't homeless.
Exactly. It was a hard-working
panda
family panda.
That's pregnant.
Yeah.
What do they put music on for the pandas?
They
probably
should do.
Mood music.
They should do.
Yeah, a bit of Barry.
Yeah. Barry White, yeah.
Manilow.
Oh, Barry Manilow.
No, White.
There's a little glimpse into your life.
No, maybe they don't need... Maybe they don't need kind of, you know, Barry Manilow. They need something like dubstep, you know, Skrillex or something.
Or maybe they don't need. Maybe they don't need.
Something
smashing
to wake
pandas.
Them up.
Maybe they...
Blimey, that was a bit graphic. But maybe they don't need us watching... And just a few camera crew. I mean, I know, Tom, I know you like that. But the
I'm
rest
all about
of us...
the panda porn. Doesn't happen very often, though. I'd say you have to be ready at all times. You have to be ready at all times. Right, enough about my porn-watching habits. We'll play another song, and then we're going to come back and we'll talk some more. These guys have spotted some things that have got their goat, so we'll talk a bit about that. This is Concrete School, you're by Jurassic 5. It's 10:59 here on FUBAR Radio. I'm Tom Latcham with BB Lynch and James Stapper, who may or may not stick around. We'll see.
We were sitting out on the step, you know.
Ain't nothing to it. So what you gonna do around this?
Yeah, man, I'ma go over here and go in and get his brother, and see what his head is all about. Right.
I'ma say this one time, boy, and that's my word.
We rock the shot to knock fire through the Hindenburg.
The contribution is clear.
You add water to bone and get the Jurassic vibe on the microphone.
Now if you like the tone
and how the harmony's done
and the sucker MC's die before they begun,
well, I like to know it. Got the notion,
cause we're number one.
I'm not trying to say my style is better than yours, I'm just on some other shit. I'm all about the beats and the lyrics, so when you hear it, you can feel it. The vibe is energized by the presence of my spirit.
No interference, we persevere. The purpose is clear, we're here to leave your ear hurt and severe. You're lurking in fear, cause we take it back like Robin Loxley, rocking from countryside to spots where hard rocks
be. I often wonder if these MCs even know how it feels to dedicate their whole life to this mic of steel. It's not about the bill, that's not keeping it real. A lot of tight rappers out here ain't got no deal.
We appeal to the brothers with flow finesse, cause it's the 100-watt bloodshot game of death. Cause we're protected by the covenants of words and beats. Rewind and feel the heat, recline and take a seat.
So let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats with real live MCs. Playground tactics, a rabbit and a hat trick. Just that classic rap shit from Jurassic. Let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats of real live MCs. Playground tactics, no rabbit in a hat tricks. Just that classic rap shit from Jurassic.
Now I walk from Transania, earthquake Transylvania, and all the way I kick the hole through the wall of China just to get the right blend. Cause of schizophrenic of the pen. Wait a minute, I fell into the deep end. You shouldn't have told me the pyramids can hold me. So now a contest is what you owe me.
Pull out your beats, pull out your cuts.
Give us a mic,
what up? And we gon' tear shit up.
I'm on some old and forgotten. Sun up to sun down, like picking cotton. The nutty professor, science dropping, rocking Robin's hood from New York to Compton. Me and my three sons, Jabari, Shakir, and Compton.
So let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats for real live MCs.
MCs. Playground tactics, a rabbit in a hat tricks. Just that classic rap shit from Jurassic. Let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats for real live MCs. Playground tactics, a rabbit in a hat tricks. Just that classic rap shit from Jurassic. Hey, I'm tuna fish from UNITY. Do a die and die Illuminati. Why do the liquid from my vocals make the ghetto start swimming? Forever winning, I'm in it like metal log.
I get goosebumps when the bassline thumps. A sucker MC the style, he had mine for lunch. Mark 7, get you open like an attaché. Briefcase in this case, defeat there is no way.
With tool spinners, cooking a full dinner. Killing the firstborn of lyrical Yule blenders. Winners at the academy, rattling your anatomy. Gotta be J5, so kill all your fake flattery.
That'll be the day when labels pay our way. Tune to what you say when MCs come to play.
Unfitted, cause we take it back like Spinal Tap. Preparing your intellect before your final nap. So
let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats for real live MCs. Playground tactics, the rabbit and a hat tricks. Just that classic rap shit from Jurassic. Let's take it back to the concrete streets. Original beats for real live MCs. Playground tactics, the rabbit and a hat tricks.
Got beef, huh? Watch your lot, settle it. I fuck around and arrest your whole development. I'm eloquent when it comes to digital display. I'm ready for the world while you earl off the Tango Ray tactics. My shit's Jurassic. Fingers of death while you exhale and inhale with the deep breath. With my chop suey style, cause I'm a lyrical chef. I get smarter to the death, cause I be cooking from here to Brooklyn. Your shit's annoying like fat ass bookmen on good times when I rhyme. I hit the designated area. I hope you got your shots, cause this is lyrical malaria. Spreading, beheading fools with the punishment. I live in America, but fuck this government. 150 times over, silver with lead. While y'all drink the simmer like my rhymes are breastfed. No artificial nipples, I flip the real skills. I thought I told you once I kicked the lyrical windmills. And backspin Benedict strictly for my benefit. I step on toes when I flow, don't get offended. Come and get with it, comprehend it when I kick it. I represent the real from the beginning to the end of it.
On FUBAR Radio.
Hello, it is Tom Latcham, and it's 11:04 here on FUBAR Radio, moving into the second hour of this fun-packed show. I say it's fun-packed, but I'll leave you to be the judge of that. I'm here with Phoebe Lynch.
Phoebe Lynch,
my co-presenter for the day, and James Tapper. Do you still want a beer?
Hello, I'm just, you can't drag me away that easily, Tom. I'm still here.
That was so rude, Tom, when you said that.
What?
About getting rid of James.
No, I didn't say we were getting rid of him. I said he can stick around if he wanted. If he's having fun. It's all about whether you're enjoying yourself on the show, and if you're not, that's fine. I won't be offended. You can just go.
How
without heralding. Just
that's me sniffing, by the way. I don't know if that came through properly. But
James is on the gear again.
Crying.
He's not on the gear, I should say. That's not FUBAR Radio policy.
Not anymore.
Yet.
Fingers crossed, team.
But we've been. I asked you guys to sort of come up with some amusing stories, or not amusing. Just
and I didn't do that, did I?
No, you didn't. Things that have caught your eye or got your goat, basically. And so I asked you for some ideas. I've seen some interesting stories, but we'll talk about yours first, BB.
Put you on the spot.
I can't remember what I put forward to you.
Well, the secret coincidences, because apparently you had a premonition of coming on my show, maybe. Is that right?
Wasn't quite like that.
Oh, right.
So you know the book, The Secret?
No.
No, you don't know the
book.
Tell us all about it.
In that case, I don't know it.
There's a book called The Dummy's Guide to the Secret. No, there's a book called The Secret, and God knows when it came out, but it was a huge hit in America, and I think actually maybe Oprah would have kind of pushed it, so it kind of went crazy. Anyway, the premise behind this book, you are listening, aren't you?
Yeah. Tom?
Do you want to write this down, or do you want to?
I know. I'll remember every word I ever
answer?
I'll remember it.
Okay. Good luck, Jake.
Thanks.
So
it's a test.
So the book is, the premise is, if you can imagine something, but really imagine it. So you're not just imagining, oh, yeah, I'd like a cup of tea. You imagine tasting the tea.
Oh, I'd like a cup of tea.
Well, I've got one here.
And, I'm looking at the gallery. I'd love a cup of tea.
No, they can't hear a thing.
That'd be delicious.
They can't hear a thing. No. And if you imagine it, and if you want it.
I'm imagining drinking a cup of tea right now. I'll see if that works.
I think what the secret would like is you to aim a little higher than a tea, like cappuccino, for instance. But anyway, so the idea is you put it out there to the universe or whatever.
I was going
to
be horrible.
Don't do it. Panda porn? No. And then, so you put it out there, and if you imagine it and want it and blah, 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 it comes to you.
Mm.
So I was working with a client, and I was thinking, oh, it would be really good if they got in touch to ask me to do these 2 days, because they're the 2 days I want to do. And I was like, no, 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 no. And I know this sounds a little bit low level. They only emailed the next day and offered the day. So I was quite excited.
Oh, yeah, great,
and then
yeah.
you, Tom Latcham, the other day, were in my head. And I was thinking, I haven't seen Tom for ages. And I was thinking about you and the show. Mm. What happens the next morning? What's the little text that comes through?
Someone pulled out.
It's the police. then there was a text from you. Someone pulled out.
Someone pulled out. Can you come and do my show? You know what that is, BB?
What's that, darling?
Coincidence. That's what it's called.
But
it's called coincidence.
I like the
happy
idea.
Coincidence.
Yeah, but I like the idea. And then and as I, you know, painstakingly typed out to you, not only did you get in touch, I was thinking about my friend M, thinking, oh, I really need to ask M something. It's a little bit tricky. So in my head, I was wording an email, James. Mm-hmm. I like to word an email. And then I actually typed said email. As I was typing it, email came in from her suggesting the thing I was going to... I
that
know.
True.
Now,
extremely
I don't amazing. Know if this is all crazy, but I quite like the idea of letting go of control and saying, OK, universe, you do it. So if it is as simple as thinking and something happens. But coincidence, right, this is a weird thing. When I was a kid, my mum and I... Now, I'm not sure if I've made this... I did have a mum, but I'm not sure if I've made the rest of the story up.
That's useful.
Because
it's nice to have a mother.
It was lovely. but she had lovely hair. But I can't remember if I made the rest of this up, but I believe in my horrible old memory that we both, in the same morning, went down to breakfast and we both said that we dreamt about Michael Jackson being on fire.
Wow.
And it was when Michael Jackson...
Was on fire! That's amazing.
I don't mean in the hit parade. I mean, you know,
I think it must. You must have seen something the previous day.
I can't think what.
Maybe the radio was on somewhere else, and you could hear about
maybe,
Michael Jackson.
But this was 1782. But anyway, my point is: do you two believe in this, in putting stuff out? Do you believe in the universe making real what you wish for?
No.
No.
Thank you, Tom.
No. I tell you what. I've had some coincidences. I just think they're just random. And if you really look at the numbers, they all make sense in the end. So I went to university in Manchester. And I remember getting on a bus that was going from one of the student halls of residence up into the centre of town. And a guy got on with his Welsh girlfriend, and he saw a friend of his who was also Welsh, and he said, oh, you probably know each other because you're both Welsh. And so, and lo and behold, actually, you know, they did have people in common. They knew people in common. And after about 10 minutes of this conversation,
they realised they were related.
Yeah, that's a delightful story of inbreeding.
It's far better than that because this chat was getting... You know, you could see he's getting a bit pissed off because he'd introduced his girlfriend to this guy, and it was like, she's not talking to him. And he was sitting right in front of me. So I turned around to him and said, so mate, where are you from? He said, oh, I'm from North London. Oh, really? I said, whereabouts? Enfield. Oh, really? I said, do you know a bloke called Stephen Bland? I don't know why I mentioned Stephen Bland.
Oh, everyone knows. Well, I'm from Enfield. I love Stephen Bland.
I miss Steve.
I am actually from Enfield, and Stephen Bland is a ledge.
Stephen Bland was... I was in a band with him, and this guy had seen us. He'd seen me play at the George Robey in Fensbury Park, which I don't know if you remember the George Robey.
Oh, really?
But yeah, we'd played, and he'd actually carried my drum kit for me. So this guy, who was completely, you know, on the bus, being pissed off about the fact that he'd... randomly introduced somebody to each other and they knew each other, actually was somebody I knew as well. So, but when you think about it, is that really such a surprise? Because
Stephen Bland's a slag.
Exactly. Well, there is that. No. is it really such a surprise? Because
Stephen Bland's carried everyone's drums.
It's not as if we weren't on a bus in Lewisham or something like that.
Okay.
We're in Manchester, both students.
I've got one. I was in Slovakia watching England play Slovakia in 2002, and I basically didn't have a ticket for the England end, I had a ticket for the Slovakia end. So I went in the Slovakia end, and I stood next to... Oh, I just stood in there, and I was... Because there was lots of reports of people being beaten up, I was slightly nervous. I just stood there in the Slovakian end, surrounded by Slovakian people, and a bloke went, you're English, aren't you, mate? And I was like, yeah. And he went, don't worry, so am I. I'll look after you. And I was like, okay. And I said, oh, you know, are you over? And he went, no, I work here. I work in a school. And he said, oh, all right. He said, who do you support? I said, oh, I support Bournemouth. He said, oh, I support Bournemouth as well. I was like, what are the chances of that? That is minimal.
I didn't realise there were more than two.
I know, well, quite. Like, and he amazing. Said, no, well, my parents live in Bournemouth, and whenever I'm back, I go and watch Bournemouth play. I was like, but I said, I'm not from Bournemouth, I'm from North London. He said, really? I'm from Palmer's Green. I said, I'm from Palmer's Green. He said, you know the Fox? I was like, yeah, that's my local. He said, that's my local too, and I was living in England. So there was a Bournemouth fan from Palmer's Green who drank in my local, and I stood next to him in a 30,000-seater stadium in the Slovakia end. That is weird. I didn't know
you used to go down the Fox.
I did, yeah. With Stephen Bland. He used to carry me drums.
So I was staying in my not homeless state with a friend recently, and we discovered that we had actually been at the same party when I was 14.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird. How do you know that? How are you, like, are you telling about all the parties you've been to in your life?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, if it was me, then it would be quite a narrow category. I think I've been that too many.
You and Stephen Bland used to tear it up.
You're not joking.
Yeah, I am. I am joking. I used to cry about showbiz, for God's sake. I've been for far too many parties. All of them crap.
Right, well, we're going to play a song now, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk, hopefully talk to a journalist and anthropologist who's lived in Molenbeek, which is the jihadi capital of Europe, which I said last week, I joked, was probably a nightmare for estate agents.
Molenbeek.
Is it Molenbeek?
Molenbeek.
Well, thank God you're here, James. Yeah. Anyway, this is Shuffle by Bombay Bicycle Club. We'll be back right after this.
Once you
Hello, it's 11:16. I'm Tom Latchman here with BB Lynch still and James Tapper, who's remained here. He's obviously enjoying himself.
I haven't got tea.
Pardon?
I haven't got tea.
You haven't got tea? We didn't think about it, did you?
Yeah, I
should say that I thought about the tea and I got the tea.
It's brilliant. You also announced it.
The assistant producer bought me the tea after I thought about it and said it out loud.
Yeah, in quite a threatening
way. To be fair, I don't actually. I'm trying not hard not to think about tea because I don't like tea.
Oh, well, there you go. Oh, yeah, that'd be the worst thing to get if you just don't give me a tea.
That's another
don't
thing about the tea. Secret. That's what apparently, you can't think about things because if you say I'm going to have a terrible haircut, I'm scared I'm going to have my haircut's going to go bad. It'll go bad.
Yeah, I hope I don't fall down when I go outside, etc.
Exactly.
Now on this show, we obviously lots of light and shade, and I did say earlier that we'd be talking to a journalist and anthropologist who lived in the Brussels district of Molenbeek. Am I saying that right, James? No?
Molenbeek.
Molenbeek, of course, has been in the spotlight recently when it was awarded the dubious honour of being labelled the jihadi capital of Europe after it emerged the Paris terrorist atrocities have been mastermind in that part of the Belgian capital. No, it's not the Belgian capital, in that part of the Belgian city. It left many people, including myself, last week, wondering how an area in an otherwise wealthy European city could become such an apparent hotbed for Islamic extremism. Now, Toon Verten lived there for 9 years. He's a photojournalist and anthropologist. He lived there for 9 years and he wrote recently a really fascinating article about his time in the area and the changes that he'd seen taking place. He received a lot of flack for it and he's here joining us on the line to talk about his article and about Molenbeek. Hello, Toon, are you there?
Yes, hello, I'm here, yeah.
No, thanks for joining me, my friend. So, I was wondering out loud last week how an area can become how can come to get the title of the jihadi capital of Europe. So what is it, do you think, in your opinion, as someone who's lived there, that's made Molenbeek become known as the jihadi capital of Europe?
Well, I've been thinking about it a lot, and then I wrote an article, and basically I think it has to do with three sets of reasons. First of all, it has to do with the physical infrastructure of the neighborhood. It's a neighborhood with a lot of very small streets, a lot of cafes, a lot of tea houses, a lot of coffee houses, shops, a lot of businesses, very lively on the street. You have a lot of mosques. So it's basically the perfect place for extremists to hide and to go underground. The same like the guerrilla in Colombia loves to hide in the jungle. Her jihadists feel at home as a fish in the water. They can come, they can go. And of course, you have very close proximity to major transport hubs such as Gare du Midi, the fast train to Paris, and the highway. So that's one very, very technical reason. The other reason is that Belgium is a pretty decentralized government, country, and now I'm saying it very friendly. Some call it a failed state, some call it a dysfunctional state, but in Belgium you have five governments, the Flemish, the Walloon, the federal, the government of Brussels, and the city of Brussels itself has also like 19 burgemeesters, 19 mayors. You have districts, Anderlecht, Molenbeek, Uccle. Each has its own mayor, its own city council. So you have a terrible decentralization. You have very weak authorities. You have security services that sometimes cannot even communicate because some speak French, some speak Dutch. Some security services are just competing with each other and sabotaging each other. So basically, and of course, needless to say, it's impossible to put people with capacities and talent on all these positions. So you have a lot of opportunistic idiots, I would say, administrating Belgium, and this lack of strong central authority has made a lot of scandals possible. We had the Nijvel, the gang of Nijvel in the 1980s. They killed a lot of people, was never solved. We had the child pedophile scandal of Dutroux. And right now, in this vacuum of a weak state, armed group proliferated. It's basically very classic war theory. If you have a weak state, opportunistic armed groups will seek opportunities. So that's another reason. And the last reason, in Belgium, it's very, you have a very strong political correct discourse. It's dominated by a progressive elite. And if you point at certain things, for instance, high occurrence of criminality against Moroccan youth, if you point at violent tendencies in Islam, you're immediately branded right wing and you're isolated and you're no longer part of decent political debate. And I had a few of my journalist friends Moroccan woman actually did undercover work in 2006. Hintree, she wrote a book undercover in small Morocco. Basically, she was called a traitor of her own community. She was called a spy. She pointed at really dangerous Salafistas walking around. Another colleague, Arthur van Amerongen, wrote a book in 2008, Brussels, Arabia. And he was also branded a fascist. So basically, I pointed also at these things, and people tried to brand me as a racist too, which of course is, I'm not. I mean, I'm working 25 years as a war photographer, and I'm a staunch defender of human rights and human dignity. But it's in this culture, it's very hard to put to point at these tendencies. So basically, people have ignored this issue. There was a socialist burgomaster, a socialist mayor in Molenbeek, for whom it was impossible to talk about crime and extremism, and this thing has been festering for 10 years, and now now the chickens are coming home to roost.
Well, how did you feel when you saw it was the base for those who carried out the Paris attacks? I assume from what you've just said you weren't wholly surprised.
No, I was not surprised at all, because there has been a tradition. There were attacks in Verviers early in this year in Belgium. These attacks came from Verviers. The woman that blew herself up, the first Belgian suicide bomber, used to live in Molenbeek. The guy that planned to carry out a horrible shooting on the Tallis, he stayed with his sister in Molenbeek. The guy who carried out the horrible attack at the Jewish Museum last year, he had a base in Molenbeek. So it's basically, you have like a lot of cheap apartments. You just can go there, and within a few hours you can rent a room, and nobody's asking any questions. So it's I was not at all surprised.
Obviously, you say you were criticised at the time for branded an extremist for what you said. Are your views now being taken more seriously?
Well, I'm very happy to see that some people, because I'm an anthropologist, I do research, I see facts, and sometimes I see conclusions that even I don't like. But it's my duty to present these facts and say how I arrived at these conclusions. And I see more and more that the debate is slowly opening up, and that you can discuss these issues. And that was about time. And of course, there are still a lot of people that say, well, not everybody is a terrorist in Molenbeek. But my point is, I always have said 95% of the people in Molenbeek are really decent people. But there is a very small minority of terrorists. But also, it's very important to note, these terrorists have received a lot of tacit support in Molenbeek during the time of the Charlie Hebdo attacks. I saw nowhere in Molenbeek one poster, "Je suis Charlie." If you would have done it, if I would have done it in my neighborhood, my windows would have been smashed. And so there is a lot of tacit support for extreme, violent, radical Muslim terrorism.
And so, what can we do to combat
to put it very bluntly, I think we are in a war, and it's a very kind of special war. It's a hybrid war. It's not a war between states and between armies. It's fought out on all fronts in Syria, in Iraq, but also in inner cities of and in the beautiful centers of our European cities. And you need the enemy use different tactics. So we should use different tactics too. And you should use education, prevention, job creation, social exclusion, poverty is one reason that people go to extremism. But a lot of extremists and terrorists, they come from pretty okay families, so it's not the only exclusive reason. And the left has always said, it's because of social exclusion. If we give these people money and a job, we don't have this problem. That's not the case. So it should be a combination of soft tactics, but also very harsh tactics, repression. And someone who goes to Syria to fight and comes back, who has fought with ISIS, the left has normally treated them as victims, but these are not the victims. These are accomplices of an organization that is guilty of the most gross human rights violations and the most horrific war crimes. And people who have gone to fight there, they should be arrested upon return, and then they should be investigated. Are they guilty? They should be convicted. Are they not guilty? They can be set free. But it should be really a combination of all kind of tactics. And right-wing people say, oh, it should be repression and bombing the hell out of them. left-wing people say, oh, it should be education, but it's both sides are completely wrong. It should be a combination of
somewhere in the middle, as
four or five.
As ever, usually probably the truth lies somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah, but it's a combination of tactics. Yeah, the truth lies in the middle area.
Thank you very much. Listen, Tun, that's great. Thank you for joining us. Fascinating stuff. That was Tun Voten there, who lived in Molenbeek for 9 years, and written an article about it, and received lots of criticism for it, but
you know,
might be onto something. I think he's quite sensible.
But he's saying that that he wasn't surprised. So if he knew all that information, you'd imagine the relevant authorities that could do something to have maybe stopped that would have also known that information. Why was nothing being done to crack down there?
Well, I think it's a failure of government by the sound of it. Mm. I mean, the thing about Molenbeek...
Well, apparently the mayor of Molenbeek was initially was sort of quite heavy on that side of things, and then realised that he could get very strong Muslim vote, because it's like 80% mm-hmm. Moroccan around there, mm-hmm. And so he then sort of was a lot softer on it to make sure that he got the vote and stayed in. Yeah. So
I mean, I think Molenbeek's had a problems for a long time. I mean, I did read in one of the papers that King Leopold II, who ruled Belgium at the turn of the century, turn of the 19th to 20th century, actually had an avenue built so that he didn't have to go through Molenbeek when he left Brussels.
That's a long history.
So, I mean, it's been like that for a long time. And you look back, I mean, there are some extraordinary stories that have come out of Molenbeek in the last 20 years.
So you don't think this is the most shocking?
There was one of Belgium's worst serial killers was from Molenbeek. He killed two wives, two stepdaughters and two of his sons and buried them under his patio in Molenbeek. Mm. I mean, there was 10 years ago, there was a firebombing. You have, essentially, it's right next to a canal, this area, and it's always been a part of Brussels, which has had these problems associated with it.
I suppose in many ways it's like Whitechapel in London, I suppose. Exactly. And which is interesting to think that why we haven't got a similar problem. It doesn't seem to be a problem anywhere like on the same scale as Molenbeek.
It's extraordinary if it's one area with all that history. Well, what is that?
Well, it's funnily enough, there used to be a part of London which was known as Alsatia, which was round by White Friars. There was an old monastery called the White Friars Monastery, which was disbanded during the Reformation, and then it became a sort of a lawless area in central London, which for a couple of hundred years, effectively, people who were criminals, that wasn't that long, but it was at least more than 100 years, people who were criminals could spend their time in this area of London, quite close to the Inns of Court, where the law courts are near Holborn, and they could nobody could touch them because all the justices of the peace couldn't get into this area. And it was only when government took charge of the situation and actually said, no, the rule of law has to apply everywhere, that it...
And now this is an international, catastrophe. You'd imagine maybe now more power will be put there, maybe more now force there to... I mean, you can gentrify areas. Can you not decriminalise areas? I know it's not that simple,
exactly.
but there must be ways.
I mean, they did it in the 18th century in Britain, so I don't think it should be beyond the Belgian authorities. But this is the thing. There has to be authority in Belgium, and if there isn't authority in Belgium, then they can't do anything.
Don't tell us you never learn anything here on this show. Yeah. James Tapper there with a little history lesson.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, James.
Sorry about that.
No. Fine. We like it.
What did I contribute? Nothing.
Said something about catastrophe. Yeah. Anyway, this is me, Tom Latchin, with BB Jones and James Tapper. We're going to play Higher by Sigma featuring Labyrinth, and we'll be back with a look at the business news, and hopefully, if he's got off his plane... Steve Lillis will be talking to us about boxing. It sounds like he has got his plane, so we'll be talking to him a bit later to preview the world title fight that's coming up this weekend. It's Fubar Radio, it's 11:30.
I have given all myself, all that I had left to give, all the reasons I confront. You're my reason left to live. If that ain't enough, oh no, tell me why it's not enough. Hey, even when you let me down, I'll forgive you in the end. What goes round comes back around, so I'll wait for you till then. If that's not enough, oh no.
Business with Matt Haycox. In association with Access Commercial Finance. Creative commercial funding.
Yes, it's time now for our usual weekly look at the business with Matt Haycox, our business expert. Over the past few weeks, Matt's been talking us all through the early stages of starting a business. And today, we'll be focusing on how to spread the word of your great idea. How should you market your new product to the world? And Matt, not come down to see his beautiful face. He's in Leeds still on the phone.
I had every intention, I'm sorry.
That's what they all say, Matt. That's what they all say. All the girls say that. So tell me, Matt. I mean, obviously, you've set up businesses in the past and very successful businesses. How important is an effective marketing strategy to a business?
I mean, it's completely paramount. It doesn't really matter what line of business you're in, you know, if or how good your product is. If people don't know about it, then they can't buy it. And every sector, every business is going to have its own kind of marketing strategy. But unless you get the word out there, then you're going to be having an uphill battle.
And what sort of marketing works best? Have you found in your experience?
I mean, it really depends what line of business you're in. One of my first businesses, as we know, was bars and nightclubs. And you know, for me, people might not think of it as marketing, but you know, getting the right location on all the units we had was key. And a discussion I always used to have with people was about rents, and they'd say, you know, you're crazy. How can you pay, you know, whatever that figure was? You know, how can you pay $100,000 rent? You know, how can you ever afford that? And you know, if you look at the locations we had and the footfall that came past those doors, you know, I'd say to people, well, if I had half that rent and was spending $50,000, it's impossible to spend £50,000 of marketing and get the same level of traffic of people walking past those units. And you know, and so for us that was key. But you know, maybe your business is needing social media, maybe it needs, you know, paid advertising on the street corners or a sales force. I mean, everyone's got their own things to do, but you know, you need to be doing something.
And how much of your overall budget should you be putting into marketing?
Again, you know, I sound like a broken record here saying it depends what line of business you're in, but you know, ultimately, it's going to depend how much you're selling your product for and what your margins are. You know, if you've got big margins in your product and therefore you know you can afford to spend higher marketing, then you know the question needs to be almost, you know, can you afford not to spend it? And you know, obviously, if you've got fine margins, then you need to maybe have some more guerrilla strategies out there. And you know, things like you know, having a loyal customer base and having a strong social media following is going to be a lot more important than someone who's got, you know, really high margins and they can, you know, they can pay for that traffic for them.
How much has social media changed the way in which businesses market, and does it actually really work?
I'm no social media expert, you know, but I think it's almost impossible to have any business now without some kind of social presence. And you know, each one of the different channels has their own kind of pluses and minuses. You know, so whether that's, you know, Facebook or Twitter or if it's LinkedIn for more of a business situation, I think, you know, what is very very good in the social side of things is how quick you can reach you know, a huge amount of people that you would just never have been able to do, you know, say 5 years, 10 years ago. And you know, if you've got the right product or the right kind of viral strategy, you know, you can really be these overnight internet sensations, you know, that we hear about nowadays.
Hi, it's James Tappy. I was just wondering, how do you best assess how your marketing is working? What are some good ways of doing that?
Well, I mean, I always remember being told, you know, that 50% of marketing is a waste of money. You know, you just don't know which 50% it is. And I think, you know, depending, you know, what channels you're using, you always need to put something in there so that you can monitor how it's coming back. So let's say, for example, I don't know, you had an advert in a particular media publication, then maybe you need a different telephone number in each publication so you can track where those calls are coming from. Or if you're doing paid search or paid advertisements on the internet, you can put your tracking codes in to see which ones are working. I mean, you know, I suppose it's not rocket science how you track it, but you know, it's a good point you bring up that you know, it's very important to see which ones do work, because you know, you don't want to be wasting money on strategies that don't.
But it's a sort of
everyone's obviously marketing, and it's probably quite a crowded market now. So the businesses have to be more clever and cute in the way that they market their businesses or their products now?
I think very much so. I mean, I think that, you know, the cleverness and the cuteness is a big thing with the internet and the viral strategies. And, you know, I think, you know, clever and cute to me is also, you know, hitting the, you know, the highest number of people for the lowest cost base. Because, yeah, you know, yes, it's very easy to go and hit hundreds of thousands of people overnight. You know, go and take an advert in EastEnders, and I'm sure you're sure you'll reach a huge market. But if that's you know, the cost of that, that's probably enough to send most businesses under. So, you know, it's a matter of how can you contact those people, you know, as cost effectively as possible.
And finally, how important is it to continuously network to expand your reach in terms of marketing?
Yeah, as important as it is in the you know, to be doing it in the first place, you know, I think we're in a very competitive marketplace out there now, and, you know, as the only way to look at it, I suppose, is pedalling in a race. And, you know, it's one thing pedalling super fast at the beginning and getting that head start, but, you know, as soon as you start to take your feet off the off, and other people will catch up with you, and then they will overtake you, and, you know, you cannot rest on your laurels, you know, no matter how I suppose popular your product is or how strong your place in the market is. You know, there's always going to be someone snapping at your heels, and you know, you've got to be constantly remarketing, constantly evolving.
Thanks, Matt. It's good to speak to you, and maybe I'll see your fine figure next week in the studio.
You will definitely see me next week, I promise. It'll be nearly Christmas drinks time, and we can't do that over the telephone.
That sounds good. That sounds good to me, mate. I look forward to it. See you later, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
Cheers.
Nice to see you.
Bye. That's Matt Kaycox, our business expert. You're talking about cutesy marketing, right? You know, them ones on a tube, like, they're all the little poems that they have on the tube.
Oh, the poems,
I hate them.
Yes.
I hate them. But me and my girlfriend were talking about
summer is
no, but they're shit
in.
Poems, aren't they? Me and my
some classic of English literature. Summer is a coming.
No. But they do like all those sort of, you
yeah,
know,
okay,
ones about
point,
sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
public service ones where, you know, don't run on the pavement because you'll fall over and whatever. But yeah, the big thing that wasn't
whatever
that wasn't but like
Purple Ronnie, but not.
But basically, you know, the one thing that I'd like to see them do, and me and my girlfriend have been talking about this, it's really annoying, is people who wear backpacks on the train and they keep them on. So we were thinking, you know, maybe it needs a sort of cute little poem, like, and I came up with one like, roses are red, violets are blue, take your fucking backpack off, you prick. Something like that.
It's
that
really works. Lovely.
Yeah. Verse,
oh, that's
yeah.
made me feel quite emotional. that was actually beautiful. And it was the delivery.
Yeah. I've missed a trick,
you
frankly. I mean, radio,
you know what, I
is
asked?
Stealing me away from poetry, my true calling.
You know what I should have asked just then? When marketing goes wrong, do you ever...
Why didn't you ask?
Because,
it would have been a good question.
No, because you were in a flow and you'd have both asked brilliant questions. But it's like,
I was about to, and then you ended the interview. I thought...
I tell you when marketing did go wrong. It's 3 years, last week, 3 years since Susan Boyle's album launch party.
Yeah, yeah.
And the hashtag... Did you not see this, James? The hashtag was Susan Album Party, which in one word is Susanal Bum Party.
Susanal Bum Party.
Susanal Bum Party, and I think that marketing woman probably got the sack.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we'll play a song. This is not the
best pay rise ever.
It's true. Oh, well, actually, yeah, probably went.
Yeah.
Probably did loads of better for actually.
Bottom line.
Actually having her actually
yay.
Having an album party.
Bottom
very
line,
good. Very
I don't
good.
Think
thank
that's
you.
Appropriate.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm so sorry.
If that was a bum note, here's one who isn't. This is Squeeze of Up the Junction. Oh, we're so
I
good.
I love Squeeze.
Bye. listen, I beg for some forgiveness, but begging's not my business. But she won't write a letter, though I always tell her, so it's my assumption I'm really up the junction.
An absolute tune there by Squeeze. Up the Junction, it's Fubar Radio, it's 11:45. I'm still here with Habibi Lynch, my co-presenter for the day, and James Tapper. He's decided to stick around, he's obviously loving it. Anyway, he's going to tweet, probably get involved now, because there's a question in our next section that James Tapper wants to ask. So he'll wait until I finish asking some questions, and then he'll chip in at some point. But British boxer Tyson Fury this Saturday takes on world heavyweight champion Vladimir Klitschko. He will defend his WBA Super, WBO and IBF titles in Dusseldorf, having last tasted defeat more than a decade ago. Now, Fubar Radio's resident boxing pundit Steve Lillis has managed to get off the plane, the jet setter. He's got off his plane from Las Vegas, where I believe he's been at boxing over the weekend, and he joins us on the phone to preview the bout. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Tom. How are you, fella?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Good, mate. Just a Heathrow in transit back to Manchester.
And you were at a fight, I assume, over the weekend? Steve?
We've lost Steve.
Can you try and get Steve back on again? Because we've just literally
Should I talk about my boxing knowledge?
We know he's in transit. That's what we know. We know he's in transit, but we'll try and get him back on the phone in a second. Well, basically, while we try and get him on, Tyson Fury is fighting this weekend. I've got a story about Tyson Fury, which is handy. Now Steve's gone. I once sparred with Tyson Fury.
Whoa!
Yeah. I will tweet some of the photos out.
You mean you went shopping with him?
No. Very good.
Sorry.
Basically, when I was in Manchester working for the Daily Mirror, there was this young up-and-coming fighter called Tyson Fury. Great name. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So we basically went and... He was so big, so tall, he couldn't find a sparring partner, apparently. That was the story. It was on the local news. So the newspaper, the boss, sent me down there to spar with him, and I basically looked like his disabled brother.
You got on very well with your boss, obviously. You're a favourite.
I had a particularly bad haircut at the time as well. And I will tweet these photos out at some point, on Saturday or some point. I'll tweet them out anyway at some point. No! And there's me just sort of like holding out a tape measure, measuring his arm span. And I just basically hey Tyson, can I get involved in your training please, and this was basically him pretending to hit me in the face lots of times. Didn't make the paper, what category would you be, Tom?
Welterweight,
super heavyweight. Super heavyweight. Anyway, Steve Lillis is apparently back on the line. Steve Lillis, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there, Tom. Hello, mate.
You're obviously in transit, so the signal's not very good. Now, this is a great time for British boxing. We've got no fewer than 10 world champions. The question I want to know is, will we have an 11th on Saturday when Tyson Fury fights Vladimir Klitschko?
I don't think so. I'll say no. I'm sorry to wheel over your chips, but no, I can't say it. Look, unless, you know, Vladimir Klitschko... become an old man, as they say in boxing terms, overnight, it's hard to make a case for Tyson. Oldest of everybody else in the world, the second favorite in the world now.
Steve, we can't hear you, mate. The line's too bad. He's in transit. The line's too bad. We'll have to leave that
Steve
one.
Steve went to all the trouble of going to Las Vegas and coming back to make that phone call.
I know. Well, we'll get him on another time, I'm sure.
But are you a fan of boxing, then?
I'm not a... I mean, I like it. I don't know anything a huge deal about it. You know, my brother's a much bigger... expert than I am. My brother commentates on it for another radio station, because other radio stations do exist. But yeah, he commentates on it for another station, and he's a big boxing fan. Because I go to the big ones.
I used to go to boxing with my dad. Boxed at, or trained at the above the Half Moon pub in Herne Hill, and was part of Brixton ABA, so I used to go and down there, and then they would have dinner and dances at the Cat's Whiskers in Streatham.
Oh, really?
And I would love it, and we'd go to these dinner and dances, and they'd be like, I mean, how weird, like a boxing match, and then they'd take the ring off, and then they'd be like, you know, bad dinner, and then maybe a band. And I remember my dad saying to me once, oh god, he said, oh, Shalimar are playing, turned up, Shaq Attack.
Well, that doesn't mean anything to me. It probably means something to James.
Oh, I've heard of Shaq Attack.
Oh my god, how Shalimar, old are you?
Probably, yeah.
How old am I?
Yeah, you're old. I mean, how old am I? I'm 33, but you're older.
Why do you keep saying it?
Sorry. Well, it's, you know, Shaq Attack is.
Well, okay, right. If anyone else knows who Shaq Attack is, you must know who Shaq. Basically,
Fubar Radio is the number one online radio station for 18 to 35 year olds. I don't think anybody knows who Shaq Attack is.
If they don't, I'm going to have harsh words. My point is, it was a huge disappointment and pretty much the first disappointment and a long line of disappointments in my life seeing Shaq Attack over Shalimar. Move on.
Who was Shalimar?
Brilliant soul-y band.
I might try and find
there
Shalimar.
There it is. Shalimar's there.
Keep
it
talking.
Is.
So it was on.
Shalimar, there it is. There it is. And who was the girl?
No, sing it. No, that would be really good.
No, don't let me sing.
Please.
But I've got a beautiful voice. I've got a great vibrato. Hey, Tom.
No. Yeah.
So your boxing man is called Steve.
Steve Lillis, yeah, he's a commentator for Box Rec, Box Nation, which is they do pay per view boxing, and he's a sort of resident expert. And he used to work with me. We used to work together at the News of the World.
I really want to know why he was so determined that Fury wouldn't win.
Because he's not very good.
Because he's not good enough.
I mean, he's not very good, and also he's a strange chap. He sounds really weird. I mean, he's from travelling family. He's a traveller family, but he's from Manchester, so he's got a slight Mancunian accent. But sort of a weird Irish tinge to it, even though he's grown up in Manchester. But he basically, I think Klitschko said he had mental health problems.
Oh.
I mean, you know, in that sort of, you know, that sort of build up where they sort of.
No, I mean,
who knows? I mean, basically, he's got. He runs his mouth off Tyson Fury a lot. And Klitschko, as I said earlier, hasn't lost in 10 years. Probably not.
Who's been the best, most recent psyker of a fighter? You know the way in the alley, Ali was like amazing to really kind of upset his opponents. Who do you think has been a recent?
Well, they've started doing this new thing fairly recently where they've taken it from America, where they basically put, if there's a big fight, they preview the shows by having them up against each other in a room. Just talking at each other. And George Groves and Carl Froch had the biggest fight in British history. It was 80,000 people at Wembley, which I went to, and beforehand they had that, and Carl Froch, you could tell, had training, and George Groves, who didn't have a PR, he didn't have a manager, he didn't have a lawyer, he did it all himself.
Aww.
Too much, I think. He took on too much.
Did he win?
No. He got knocked out in round 8, but also in terms of that sort of psychological battle, he really sort of He you could tell he was on his own, and Carl Froch was trained, and the way he was sort of moved towards him, and he flinched away and stuff. It was a great bit. I tell you, actually, the guy that presents it's called Johnny Nelson. He's not very good. The guy who does it in America, I can't remember who it is, does it in America, is much, much better as a sort of presenter and sort of getting them to sort of face up, psych off against each other.
What were you going to say about the news thing about Fury today?
Well, if Tyson Fury mouths off a lot, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised by this story in the papers.
No, he does mouth off an awful lot, yeah.
But he's saying that, why don't they make just, quote, why don't they just make drugs totally legal in sports?
I think he's got a point.
Really?
Make them legal.
Well, I mean, basically, there's always some things that are banned, some things that aren't banned. It's a constantly changing milieu, so to speak.
Was that the right place for that word?
Anyway,
yeah. No. But
it's a constantly changing field. That's better.
That's absolutely.
Whereby, you know, some things are banned, some things aren't, and they move and they change. And the developments in drugs means they can always stay one step ahead because they can do certain things, and then they ban it, and then they don't. And actually, it's not gonna. If you gave somebody a body enhancement, that could make them quicker and faster, and like do the. You know,
like Steve Austin, that sort of thing.
What's Steve Austin?
The bionic man.
Yeah.
The bionic man.
Or like they could have someone like legs that go quicker or something. They could be running the 100 meters in 2 seconds. Whereas if you just give someone drugs, It's not going to change it that much, but it does mean that we're just
but
on a level playing field.
If you make drugs legal, everyone still has to then have access to the same drugs because we have to start on some level ground. Yeah. No?
I'll tell you what, there's a really interesting story, and if you ever got time to look this up, there's a East German shop putter who was a female shot putter that was basically being given so many drugs by East Germany to sort of enhance her performances over time that effectively she turned into a man. And she now lives with another woman who was... It's basically state-sponsored...
Did she turn into a male panda? This could turn this show around beautifully.
Unfortunately not. Anyway, listen, that's almost all we've got time for
going.
On
we're
the
not
show.
Leaving.
Well, you can stay.
Oh, you can stay.
That's
who's on next?
all sorts of people. We've got all sorts of things. But yeah, so we're going to have to say goodbye. But I want to say thank you to James Tapper. Thank you for joining us today.
It's been a great pleasure, Tom.
Can people follow you on Twitter?
I think they can, yeah. My Twitter handle is It's James Tapper.
There you go. How did you come up with that one?
Yeah, it's amazing.
BB Lynch, where can people follow you on Twitter?
At BB Lynch.
At BB Lynch. B I B I
L Y N C H. It's been so nice to be here.
It's been fun, isn't it? Yeah. Come back again. Now, both of you. Not you, James. anyway, thanks to both of you guys. Thanks to Matt Haycox. Thanks to Tun Voten. And thanks to Steve Lillis, albeit we only heard his voice for a very short period of time. We'll get him up another time and we can talk about some other boxing stuff. Coming up at 4 p.m., Dot Brown and Hugh Joseph with special guest Ian Sterling, I believe. Download my interviews as a podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place. 10 till 12 Tuesday morning with more fun and frivolity. We've got loads coming up next week on the show. This is Champagne Supernova to play us out by Oasis. See you later. Bye. Special people change.